Greetings and welcome to Edgy Ideas, the podcast that explores what it means to live the good life and create the good society in our disruptive age. My name is Simon Western, and I will be talking to invited guests about diverse topics, exploring social conscious and unconscious dynamics and desires. Caroline Bainbridge is an Emeritus Professor of Psychoanalysis and Culture. She taught degrees of Media, Culture and Identity. She's a film section editor for the International Journal of Psychoanalysis, been an editor of Free Associations, and currently she's set up a new consultancy called Mindings.org, where she's working with different organizations using her media and psychoanalytic skills to help organizations understand kind of where they are in the world. Caroline, you're very welcome to Edgy Ideas. How are you feeling at the moment?
Oh, it's lovely to be back. I feel so sorry for you, Simon, but you know, we'll lift your mood and discussion of this marvellous treat of a film, I'm sure. It's great to be back. And I think this is a great topic as well for Edgy Ideas. I think Gerwig does something edgy with the film. So we'll get into that, I'm sure.
We will. And yeah, I mean, I saw the film and it really triggered me. It was like so many different levels. The first was like, you know, I love the colors, the camp, the humor. I love the skill of the movement between the dolls and the humans. You know, there's so much brilliance in it and the humor. At another level, I thought, am I being rolled over by the corporate world here? Like, you know, the Mattel was kind of rehabilitating itself and sort of, you know, the Barbie I grew up with, which the feminists kind of hated, is now sort of the wonderful new Barbie. And then the third part of it, it left me, I was sat with my son and my daughter, and I left me thinking, I wonder what my son makes of this. Because for me, there was such a negative image of men in it. And I know you differ in your views on that. But so tell me kind of your kind of reactions to the film. And I know you've seen it four times, so you've got a head start.
Yeah, I've done my homework. But actually, I just find myself in the shower constantly singing I'm Just Ken, and I'm wondering what that's about, because clearly I'm not in any way Ken. But I think, yeah, I loved the film. I absolutely loved it. And even I said to you just before we started the meeting that I watched it again the other night in preparation for this, thinking, oh, it might be a bit of a slog, but actually it pulls you in. It still pulls you in. It's kind of not surprising to me. I think it's the highest grossing film globally of the year. It's pulled in 1.4 billion already. It's up there in the top 10, or on the edge of the top 10 of highest box office films ever, and certainly the highest grossing box office film made by a woman. So for me, it's kind of very enjoyable, as you say. It's very funny. What I enjoyed the most, I think, was it didn't hold back in its definitions and its inclusion of complicated ideas. And you could see complicated kids in the audience getting the complicated ideas. And what I think is quietly radical. You know, it's very, very radical to see a film, a mainstream movie that's aiming at this box office success, taking patriarchy as a given. I think that's really, really radical. It's really refreshing. The whole history of my engagement with cinema, I don't think I've ever seen that so upfront. Like, there's no question about it. Patriarchy exists and is the problem. So for me, that's quite radical. And it's kind of, I think it's where the energy comes from for me around it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was like, start my Substack essay. I say that, you know, she nailed patriarchy, and like, you know, this is kind of for real. And it's the heart of this, and it continued throughout. You know, my questions were about how the attempt to kind of address patriarchy feeds into this kind of vicious culture war, in particularly in the States, you know, and around gender, where the right populists really kind of love to kind of amplify that binary, amplify the kind of the gender war, and the portrayal of men in it. I was left thinking, is this you know, where does this lead? Where does this kind of help, or does it not kind of help? Does it feed that culture war? Are we getting too much pleasure in this kind of binary difference, or is it kind of asking the right questions?
I think I come at it from another angle, really, which is, first of all, I think the film begs for psychoanalysis. It absolutely begs for a psychoanalytic reading. It's, you know, whichever part of psychoanalysis you come from, Freudian, post-Freudian, it's about death, desire, sexual difference. Mm-hmm. If you come at it from object relations, it's about dolls and play and the roots from play into adulthood and creativity. So you know that my kind of preference is like the Winnicottian and the Kleinian kind of angle in. So I think there's something quite interesting going on about development and adolescence in the film. And I think, you know, Barbie and Ken are, you know, these kind of, in a way, a kind of adolescent couple. They're kind of, you know, this kind of smooth-skinned, kind of very slender without trying, kind of very trendy kind of clothing and costumes and stuff. And I think it's more the case with Ken. I think the film does something very, very interesting around Ken. So on the one hand, he looks like he's swallowed the red pill, doesn't it? It looks mm-hmm. like, you know, he's gone full on red pill patriarchy. You know, Kendom is like a very clunky kind of metaphor for the manosphere in some kind of way. You know, we see this all over the place, don't we? We've got all of the news kind of currently kind of full of examples, whether it's yeah. Russell Brand, whether it's Andrew Tate, whether it's, you know, Musk and Zuckerberg threatening to have a cage fight over social media dominance and just the posturing around what constitutes masculinity. It's toxic masculinity everywhere in the mediated world and environment, I think. And so I don't think it's as simple as the film is a satire for me. The film is an absolute satire. And I don't think it's as simple as this is an unthinking representation of, you know, it's not just a casual switcheroo of let's just do to the male character what films have historically done to the women. There's something a little bit more than that. So, and I also don't think it's as simple as Ken is supposed to be like, you know, a pickup artist or an alpha Chad, to use the language of incel culture. There's something about the shift that he makes from being friend-zoned by Barbie, being alphaed by the other Kens, into a kind of question where he says, you know, what am I without you? It's always Barbie and Ken. It's always Barbie and Ken. It's always Alan and Ken. It's almost like there's a kind of move into not and, but only. And that for me made me start thinking about maturity processes and how Ken kind of almost moves through this kind of very troublesome kind of adolescent, right, discovery of the patriarchy. This is what men are for, and it's all about the horses and power and that kind of, you know, the idea that horses are men extenders. It's a brilliant gag in the film. But his disappointment later on that he thought it was more about horses. Mm-hmm. And the clue for me, I suppose, around all of that in terms of the journey that Ken's on is that late in the movie, you know, towards the end when he's crying on the bed and Barbie comes up and they have this conversation about, mate, you just need to kind of figure out who you are without me. You're not, it's Barbie and it's Ken rather than it's Barbie and Ken. He does something to Barbie. He kind of brings something in and he makes her understand empathy, I think. So he invites, you know, at the beginning of the film where it's just girls' night and he wants to stay and she says, you can go now, I don't want you here. And he's hurt and that feeling is just not seen by Barbie. And at the end, he kind of reflects on the fact that he's done that to her. He's told her to go away and she sees it and says yes. And he says, it doesn't feel good, mm-hmm. does it? And mm-hmm. I think there's something about a shift into empathy that allows him to kind of actually have played with these ideas and to relinquish it and think that there are choices. I think that for me that's quite refreshing in contemporary popular culture.
Yeah, I mean another view on that was, I mean, I could see the kind of the individuation piece, like, you know, the maturity of going through the individuation, but I also, you know, for me the end of the film was also kind of like a bit American Dream-ish. It's sort of, you know, you can be yourself, be whatever you want, you know, follow your desire, create your own happiness, and it was that familiar kind of ending. And I'm thinking, it's like, so you can step out of patriarchy that easily and then you just be what you want in today's America. Well, actually in today's America, if you're a man or you're a woman, it's pretty tough, or in the West, you know, or wherever. Like we have Shahrzad from Iran with us today, like, you know, and talking about patriarchy, you know, so it's like, so that American ending was kind of, it left me, you know, pondering what does an audience who don't have critical thinking go away with? You know, what do they go back? What do they leave with? I mean, certainly they leave with an idea of patriarchy they haven't had before, or awakening, which is you know, really good. But what do they leave with in terms of kind of what they think about men? And we hear a lot about toxic masculinity, but you know, there's a lot of fragile masculinity out there. Like,
absolutely,
you know,
and he sings it, doesn't he? He's got that line of blonde fragility. It's in his Ken song, you know, I'm just Ken. You know, is this just a life? Am I just destined to lead a life of blonde fragility? And I do think that there is something about, you know, of course, it's an American movie. It's a Hollywood movie. Of course, it goes down. It's predictable. Yeah. You know, what Hollywood movie does not end in this way? There is a kind of question in my mind, which is that, you know, this is a very satirical brand world movie. There are loads of brand world movies around and about, but we don't seem to question, you know, the abject kind of impulse to buy all the Marvel figures or the DC cars or whatever it might be. And there's something about this being a particularly feminist brand world movie that I think, you know, it therefore gets stuff attached to it. Well, you know, it's selling out, it's still neoliberal, it's still brand world, it's all of this. There's a kind of interesting kind of impulse to attach the responsibility to that to a feminist film when it doesn't get attached to the million Batmans or the, you know,
I have to disagree. I grew up in a world where that was really questioned, you know. That was like, you know, that was fundamentally questioned by people on the left, by feminists, by, you know, that was like out there. And I haven't actually seen a lot of questioning of this film. I was a bit worried about my questioning of it, because, you know, you put yourself out there and you're vulnerable to attack. But I haven't actually seen a lot of, I mean, critical thinking. I'm not looking for attacks, but just any decent, like, I mean, there's lots of praise and there's lots of, and for good reasons, you know, but I haven't seen a lot of good dialogue around the movie, to be honest.
There's a couple of interesting pieces that I've read, actually. One is by Nina Power, who is a thinker who courts quite a lot of controversy in the way that she engages, especially around gender wars and culture wars and stuff. But she's published an interesting piece on Barbie in which she kind of draws deeply on her philosophical training and her work as a philosopher. So that's quite an interesting read. And I think there's another piece, this is the only piece I've seen about this, actually, a piece of writing by a scholar called Karen Cross, who has got a Substack called Healing Media. And she highlights the really surprising failure to bring in the environment and any kind of environmental awareness, especially for a film pitched at young people, you know, which is this is the uppermost concern in the minds of young people, is the future of this planet Earth. And Karen does something really playful. She's done really amazing, excellent work on Toy Story. And she points out in her piece as well around Barbie makes an appearance in Toy Story and kind of, you know, is the voice of ethical reason around authority. And it's almost like she brings that into the Barbie the movie. And then Karen goes on to write a really playful kind of potential additional scene around what Barbie and Ken could have done on the environment piece. So I'd really recommend people to look that up, because I haven't seen anybody else writing on that at all.
No, and I was disappointed by your sort of New York Times Guardian. I mean, I you know, they like the movie and they talk about it, which is fine, but, you know, like you say, I think it cries out for psychoanalysis. It cries out for, you know, something deeper to kind of understand what, you know, what does this film mean? Why is this film the kind of a billion-dollar film? Why is it really speaking to our culture at the moment? You know, what buttons is it pressing? What is it reflecting back to us? You know,
yeah.
I mean, one question I got around: what did you think about power and authority? I mean, a lot of the audience we think about GR, you know, group relations and power and authority. Yeah. Did that speak to you at all throughout the movie?
Absolutely. Thought that is very clever. Again, I think Gerwig is very quietly subversive on a number of levels, and one of the ways that she's subversive is when, you know, they've got this kind of backdrop of the Kens quietly rewriting the constitution and the Barbies kind of make it back and kind of get deprogrammed from their unconditioned, you know, acceptance of patriarchy, and they kind of create this situation in which it's kind of you know, divert the attention of the Kens and then we'll just fix the world in the background. And that's really, really clearly what's going on, especially in the context of US politics at the moment, with the very kind of dangerous manipulation of very surface level social media kind of engagement to divert the attention while, you know, the constitution is being rewritten in the other way. actually, and the danger of that. So I thought there was something interesting in mm-hmm. terms of an inversion of that power dynamic in the film, but again, at a really playful level that, you know, it kind of works at the level of satire and play, but it actually elevates a political awareness, perhaps, for an American audience of, hang on a minute, this is how we're trapped into, you know, where the ideology is in operation, I suppose, at the moment in popular culture is very much in the kind of viral culture, the explosion of attention to stuff that is distraction from the deeper, more far-reaching political kind of unraveling that's going on, to put it kindly.
I mean, the other thing which really interested me was I thought there were subtle kind of pointers to non-binary, queer. I mean, it's a very camp film. It's one of the most camp films I've ever seen. It was like that, you know, just in your face camp, you know, it's in great form. But it was I was torn between the in your face sort of binary, men are kind of bad, men are patriarchy, men are dumb, and kind of trying to escape that. And then the subtle, was it Alan, the Alan character, and the sort of the non-binary, the kind of the absence of sexuality in the dolls, and the movement towards the gynecology kind of a clinic at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was so your thoughts on that part?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think that, you know, it's upfront, and as it were, upfront and in your face that these dolls have no genitalia. Yeah. I think it works on lots of levels. You know, there's loads of critical writing in the feminist space and cultural studies space about Barbie and the politics of Barbie. And I remember somebody called a cultural studies scholar called Jonathan Bignall writing ages ago about the absence of genitalia in Barbie dolls. But here in the contemporary context, that does something quite interesting, doesn't it? Mm. It kind of frees us up from having to kind of constantly keep in mind the culture wars around gender and sex. And I think the casting is very diverse. You know, you've got a kind of very diverse range of actors, including Harry Neff, the trans actress who plays Dr. Barbie in the film. Mm-hmm. And there is something, I think, there about the removal of genitalia from the world of Barbie Land, allowing a kind of understanding of what does femininity look like when the presence or absence of genitalia is not in question, right? When we just strip genitalia out of this completely, it looks like everybody can have their bit of femininity, okay? And and everybody seems to get on. So I think there's something interesting that's going on there in terms of a response to the culture wars, or a kind of provocation of what if we took, you know, there's, I think Nina Power makes reference to the way that popular culture and mediated culture, and not just mediated culture actually, but like medicalized discourse and stuff now, making lots and lots of references to women's body parts as a way of distinguishing what constitutes a woman or not, and all of that. And I don't want to get kind of pulled into that debate, because it's not what I'm gesturing towards. It's kind of what happens if you take the body parts out, where do we sit with gender then and identity? So I think it does something interesting in that regard.
And I think Alan,
Alan, it's kind of, he's the only one without the super buff body, isn't he?
Yes,
he's
right,
he's just like, and he's constantly, on the one hand, he's like, oh, Ken, you know, I just want, you know, it's like Barbie's relationship to Ken is also Ken's relationship to Alan. Like, Ken can't see Alan kind of caring in the background. But Alan is also on the side of Barbie and occupies this kind of in-between space, I think. And there's quite a lot of coverage, if you look around, non-binary people identifying with Alan as their piece in the movie, and opening that up, that space to be neither one thing nor the other, but to actually be involved and to be entangled with the dynamic of power. And I think Alan becomes quite a kind of interesting character, you know, and all the Kens are building that wall, and he's like, we're in trouble when they realize they need to build a cross.
No, he was very interesting, and he did hold that non-binary kind of queer position, I think. Mm. You know. Mm. And then, you know, this referring to psychoanalysis, you know, the Lacanian kind of shifting need to pull away from the sort of the penis and the phallic, and trying to understand gender from a different position, still controversially, but like it was kind of I'm sure you could take an interesting Lacanian take on that kind of understanding gender differently as well, you know.
Yeah, I think that's right, and I think there's also something interesting about the use of dolls actually, and the way in which Barbie's excursion into the real world is facilitated by the fact that she's an internal object for America Ferrera's character, Ferrera rather. So we see America Ferrera, don't we, that she's kind of returned to this internal object of the mind, her doll play from when she was a child, as a way of navigating this depression and stress, the anxiety of, you know, being a middle-aged woman whose daughter doesn't, you know, want you to touch her or anything else, doesn't want to hug, doesn't want to play. And there's something really interesting to me about two things. One is the way that the doll play allows Barbie's developmental structure. So stereotypical Barbie realizes that without pain, there is no real kind of contact with emotion. Without pain, then there is no real contact with what it is to be human, and therefore with an idea of mortality and death. And she is also played with too hard, you know, that she's thoughts of death Barbie and kind of crippling shame Barbie. And the kind of idea that these things can be said out loud and allow and be brought into visibility and brought into recognition. Has an impact on the actual mother-daughter relationship when America Ferrera and her daughter come into Barbie Land, their relationship gets renegotiated. And I think that, sorry, I'm going on off on a bit of a tangent here,
Go
but
on, go on.
there's something very interesting. There's lots of assumption that because Barbie Land is run by women, it's a matriarchy. But actually, the film is really clear that maternity and the maternal is written out of Barbie Land, you know. Pregnant Barbie Midge is discontinued. We're constantly told that these pregnant or maternal dolls are discontinued, partly because they're creepy, right? But they're discontinued. So it's almost like this is a space of non-maternal woman-to-woman sociality. And we get a mother and daughter traveling into this woman-to-woman sociality. We get a witnessing of the deep repressed emotional experience that, you know, comes from a relationship between a mother and a daughter mediated in the real world, and it allows for it to be renegotiated. I'm straight back into my Irigaray origins on this one rather than Lacanian, but it's something about how the mother-daughter relationship can be negotiated differently
I
to
thought that was really
enable a kind
powerful,
of.
actually. I thought one of the most powerful things, you know, I mean, it's like these kind of side acts alongside the main story, you know, the Alan and then this kind of mother-daughter relationship and how it, like you say, it grew and it changed and it morphed and it could be re-inscribed. And then finally Barbie deciding to, you know, the last shot of her entering the gynecologist to kind of do what, you know, it's like, it's just, you know, is this a final kind of stepping into kind of, away from adolescence or into adulthood, or you know, what did that mean, like, you know, and
Yeah, it's
just
an
leaving the
interesting. It
audience with a
leaves,
question rather than an answer.
yeah. It leaves the question hanging. But again, I think that's quite daring on Gerwig's part because she's transported us into this alternative universe in which the genitalia don't matter. And we have this exploration, you know, it's a very kind of, as you say, a very neoliberal exploration of freedom and gender fluidity and the possibilities of female friendship and male friendship and doing it all differently and stuff, but then she puts us right back in reality at the end and leaves that question hanging. And I think that's a really daring move for a filmmaker to kind of invite you back in to think again, to rethink and respond to what you've seen. And that's the invitation of the film, I think.
As you know, Carol, we end our Edgy Ideas podcast with a question to the guest. What can they offer the audience thoughts on what it means to live a good life and to create a good society? And I'd like to link that question to this film and to our discussion. You know, we've discussed this before in other terms,
Yeah.
but what from this kind of film and discussion can we think? What helps individuals to live a good life and what helps create a good society? Have you got any thoughts?
Well, I was going to say something like be more Ken, which is, you know, because it's coming back to that idea of being good enough, you know, the whole kind of I am enough, the hoodie that he wears at the end. But actually, I think on reflection, it's be more Gerwig. I think it's been more open to the nuances and more open to the play. The film invites us to play with many of the assumptions that are at work in the gender wars. And I think a playful response to the idea of film as an object, of the mind, that enables us to open up space to think a bit differently and to perhaps take more responsibility for the utterances that make it out of our mouths onto social media, into the world, that fuel the kind of toxic culture wars that we're all embroiled in at the moment. So yeah, be more Gerwig is my suggestion this time.
Brilliant talking with you as ever, Carolyn. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for having me.
Farewell.